May I speak in the name of the risen Jesus. Amen. Butterfield, a British historian and devout Christian, concluded his book, Christianity and History, with these words: "Hold to Christ, and for the rest be totally uncommitted." Last year, a survey commissioned by the BBC found that a quarter of those who described themselves as Christians did not believe in the resurrection of Jesus. What about you? Where do you stand? For as Paul writes, if Christ was not raised, then is our gospel null and void, and so is your faith. Let us imagine a trial. The case for the prosecution that the resurrection did not happen would probably call John Shelby Spong as an expert witness. He's an American liberal theologian who advocates a rethinking, a reframing, a reconfiguration of traditional belief, because science and reason has exposed the soft underbelly of theology, its intellectual bankruptcy. What is needed is a new understanding of God, Jesus, salvation, and every other pillar of Christian thought and belief. God, he writes, is not a noun we are compelled to define. God is a verb that we are invited to live. While that is a proposition with which I have much sympathy, more challenging is Spong's assertion that Jesus was not a supernatural being, but one who demonstrated a new way to live. The resurrection, he claims, has been misconstrued. New Testament authors never anticipated that what they wrote would be taken literally. Resurrection, he goes on to say, was a moment of new revelation that occurred when survival-driven humanity could transcend that limit and give itself away in love to others. How then can we stand here Sunday by Sunday reciting those words from the Creed, on the third day he rose again? Spong's response is that the creeds of the third and fourth century were love songs that people composed to sing to their understanding of God. We do not have to literalize their words to perceive their meaning or their intention to join in the singing of the creedal song. Religion in general and Christianity in particular must always be evolving. Forcing the evolution is the dialogue between yesterday's words and today's knowledge. The sin of Christianity is that any of us ever claimed that we had somehow captured eternal truth in the forms we had created. So writes Spong. If we caricature Spong as a key witness for the prosecution, Rome Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, mounts a strong case for the defense, accusing Spong of demonstrating a level of confusion and misinterpretation that he finds astonishing. For unequivocally, Williams believes the resurrection of Jesus Christ did take place. What happened in the garden before and after Mary Magdalene discovered that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance to the tomb may lack clarity, even consistency. But disparity and discrepancy are so often the hallmarks of witness statements following some trauma or other. And for those first witnesses to the resurrection, it was unquestionably a life-shattering experience. Their world was changed forever. Jesus was no longer confined to the past. Whatever happened, and along with Williams, I believe that the tomb was empty and that Jesus did appear to his friends. Whatever happened, it was little short of explosive. And in reviewing the New Testament's witness to the risen Jesus, we have to repeatedly ask ourselves, what kind of event would it have been to generate a belief that the world had irreversibly changed, that Jesus was part and parcel of their God talk, their God thought, their God veneration, language, theology, and worship inextricably bound to the person of Jesus? Where then does that leave you and me? In Spong, we have the Enfant Terrible, and in Williams, a defender of orthodoxy. Both address the head, but neither addresses the heart where my faith resides. What does it mean for me, for you, today, in the here and now, resurrection? This is a question Harry Williams has explored. A priest, come monk, come theologian, recognizing that for many of us, the resurrection has always looked like something in the distance or on the horizon, belonging to another time and place, a past and future with which our connection can only be theoretical, however correct the theory is held to be. If the past is dead and the future is speculative, the resurrection is robbed of its impact in the present. Perhaps that explains why, if, as Christians are supposed to believe, Christ is the resurrection, tomorrow, Monday, will be business as usual, safeguarding the status quo of the institutional church with its culture of thoughtlessness, pride, and arrogance, as the Bishop of Chichester recently admitted in his evidence to the Independent Inquiry into Child Sex Abuse, or safeguarding the status quo of my own mental and spiritual life, insensible to Jesus' assertion that if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Perhaps this is because we have failed to see that the resurrection can be experienced in the present, if only we have eyes to see and ears to hear. Resurrection in the here and now does not make us immune to the turmoil and the uncertainties which are the ingredients of your life and mine. Resurrection takes place in the daily grind and routine of our lives, quietly and unassumingly. It is only later that we realize that in some sense or other we have been raised to newness of life, in effect reborn, having heard the voice of the eternal word. I give you three brief case studies. Two people find that their relationship has diminished to the point where they are sleepwalking alongside one another. Somehow, God knows how, a new relationship gradually emerges, one which may no longer possess the passionate excitement of first love, but is deeper, more stable, more satisfying, more robust. That is resurrection. Then there is the person who outwardly epitomizes success but inwardly despairs of a life which has come to lack meaning, purpose, and direction. It's never easy to step away, to radically change the course of my life with all the risks and uncertainties that entails. It requires courage and determination, which in themselves might be signs of resurrection. Finally, from my own experience as a hospice chaplain, a diagnosis of a life-limiting condition jars open a door of awareness, an awareness of death's proximity. Awareness, an awareness that can be soul-destroying. And yet, for some people, the experience of a life-threatening illness can lead to a different sort of awareness, an awareness of what matters in life, enabling a person to become paradoxically more alive. That is resurrection. Resurrection is and will remain a mystery. The historian and the theologian will argue it out between themselves, but for you and me, could it be that the truth of the pudding is in the eating? In other words, if you and I have been aware of resurrection in our own lives and the lives of those around us, we may be better able to see, as Harry Williams puts it, that the resurrected life is a country we have already entered and in whose light and warmth we have already lived. Resurrection, where do you stand? Amen.